Worldwide travel begins to ease as dozens of countries are affected by the latest State Department move that could loosen airline restrictions for people wanting to fly to Canada, France, Germany, Mexico, and other international locations. And I'll talk with Crane's residential real estate reporter Dennis Rodkin about news from the local housing market, including how a few key factors have created a relative sweet spot for local sellers and even buyers.
This idea that our home prices are rising fast in Chicago, they're rising fast nationwide. Ours aren't quite as fast as the rest of the nation. And that sort of puts us, I think, in kind of a Goldilocks point. Not too hot, not too cold. Pretty much just right.
I'm Amy Guth, and this is Crane's Daily Gist for Thursday, June 10th. When it comes to a professional like your doctor or lawyer, you want someone who knows you well. Wintrust believes you should have the same relationship with your banker, someone you can call directly and know they'll understand your concerns. Thousands of local business owners called their Wintrust banker when they needed Paycheck Protection Program loans. They called, Wintrust answered, and helped more than 11,000 local businesses secure funding. Learn more at wintrust.com/dailygist. Member FDIC. Hi there, and welcome to Crane's Daily Gist Live, brought to you by Wintrust. I'm Amy Guth, and I am here, as I am every week, with Crane's residential real estate reporter, Dennis Rodkin. Hello, Dennis. How's it going?
Great, Amy. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Let's start with a bit of a reality check happening on Chicago's housing market. Tell me what's going on.
This sort of adds up a lot of the data that you and I have discussed that I've covered in the last couple of months. This idea that our home prices are rising fast in Chicago. They're rising fast nationwide. Ours aren't quite as fast as the rest of the nation. And that sort of puts us, I think, in kind of a Goldilocks point. Not too hot, not too cold. Pretty much just right. Our home prices have gone up about 9% in the past year, according to the latest Case-Shiller data, which you and I talked about a couple of weeks ago, 13% nationwide, 20% in Phoenix. So while people who are looking to buy in the Chicago area now, especially first-time homebuyers, may be thinking, oh my gosh, these prices are running away from me, actually, they're sort of slinking away from you. In other cities, they're running away. So that's why it's not too hot. The reason I say it's not too cold is that for a long time, for several years prior to the pandemic, Chicago's prices were barely inching upward. You and I talked about it month after month, especially when the Case-Shiller data came out, but at other times as well. And so if you were a homeowner, an enormous number of us were underwater. Many of us still are, according to the data. But your home equity or your household wealth were just not rising that much. When I refer to home equity, I'm thinking of a person who is selling, who wants to bank on that equity when selling. And when I say household wealth, I'm sort of thinking of somebody who's not selling, but is looking at what is my house worth today. And it wasn't going up very fast in either of those cases. They are essentially the same thing. It wasn't going up very fast. Now it's going up quickly enough to satisfy me, to make it feel as if my household wealth is improving, or to make it feel as if I sell, I actually have a nice big stake that I can use for my next home. So it's good for it to be that hot if you're a seller. It's not exciting for it to be as hot as it is if you're a buyer, but when you look at other cities, you realize we're doing okay by comparison. So that's why I sort of feel like we've reached kind of a balance point. And I spoke to a couple of economists for the story who said, if you look at it that way, it does sort of look as if Chicago has reached a nice, not too hot, not too cold point.
I like the Goldilocks comparison. Anytime we can make the housing market about porridge, it's fine. It's always good.
I was going to wear my bear costume today, but I...
Wait, weird, me too. Okay. And how long do you anticipate this lasting? I mean, I know that's kind of like asking you to read the tea leaves, but are there cyclical factors we need to be thinking about that could kind of change this trajectory that we're on?
Well, one of the things that people are already talking about is that while the market has not gone cold, it has cooled a bit from the super fast spring. And that could just be that it's summer. And this is a special summer because we're able to go out again. And people are really indulging in parks and travel and those kinds of things. So if you weren't urgently in need of another home, you may have put that off for the moment. The market has not gone cold. It's still pretty wild, but it's just not the same sort of Wild West level it was recently. So that could mean, may or may not mean, that prices don't rise quite as much. On the other hand, I noticed recently that the number of homes going under contract has continued to rise. And part of that is we have sort of a double spring. We had people who put off buying in 2020 until 2021, and people who were buying in 2021 sort of in the natural cycle of their lives. So we're seeing enormous numbers of homes go under contract, and we haven't seen inventory loosen up dramatically. So what I just said about prices not rising as fast could be completely wrong.
Could be, but probably not. We'll check back on that as we do, right? But let's get into some houses. Always my favorite part of the show. Let's start with Juanita Jordan. She has listed her River North mansion at a loss. Tell me about this place.
Came on the market at $4.98 million. It's on Superior Street in Kingsbury Estates in River North. She bought it in 2007 for about $4.72 million. So there's not much space between what she paid in 2007, which was, of course, a time when people were overpaying for homes, and what she's asking now. When I spoke to her real estate agent, she said that there was a round of updates done in 2018. There have been other improvements. The total that Juanita Jordan has in this house is more than her current asking price of just under $5 million, which a lot of people who bought houses in 2007 find themselves in that position, even with the way prices are rising. And prices in this neighborhood have had some sizzle recently. We just a couple of weeks ago reported on a home selling for about $6.8 million on the next block to the one where Juanita Jordan lives. Until that sale this year, Juanita's 2007 purchase was the highest price in that Kingsbury Estates neighborhood. So she's not saying, now I want to top it again. She's offering it at less than what she paid for it and then invested to upgrade it.
And you know what I like about this house is so many of the houses that we've looked at in that little area in Kingsbury Estates have these really interesting, kind of special tucked away outdoor spaces in them that are so pretty.
It is, you know, they came along at the right time. I think I've said when we started talking about a couple of those listings earlier this year, I didn't think this neighborhood was going to work. I was totally wrong. Used to be surface parking lots for Montgomery Ward and some other entities over in sort of Northwest River North. And then in the early 2000s, all these giant mansions start getting built, and they're essentially row homes. Many of them are very narrow, but they go up four stories. And I didn't think it was going to work. I was wrong. It has worked. And one of the reasons is they came along in the 2000s when people were saying, well, if I'm building a house in the city, then my yard is up on top. And she also has two other outdoor spaces on lower floors, both of them covered. Yeah. And I think it's a nice way if you're going to live in a dense city neighborhood, you don't want to just have a tiny little patch of grass in the front. You need to be able to go outside, especially this week when it's been so beautiful. You got to get out. And here's where you would in a house like this.
That's kind of what's charming about that area, because the houses look kind of stately, even though they're these kind of row houses and fairly new. They look kind of stately, and they have these little kind of tucked away outdoor spaces that are just super cool.
Yeah, and tucked away gives them a little more privacy, because if we're a row of five houses and we all have rooftop terraces, it's just like being in a subdivision with just chain link fences between us. And when we're all outside barbecuing, we're all like, hey, what's going on? You know, and we have no privacy. These, if you have those more hidden spaces, you can go outside and not have to talk with your neighbors.
I will say the kitchen feels like it's from a different house, though. It feels like very modern. Everything else in this house feels a little more, you know, traditional maybe. And that this very modern kitchen pops in.
It's that sort of light wood black countertop that was really popular in the 2007-08, around in there, kind of a range. I think that might be what you're seeing.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Let's move to another house. This one is on Delaware Place, and a couple rehabbed. It's a 19th century home. They're asking a little over $1.62 million. Tell me about this place.
So this is one of those really nice parts of the Gold Coast, you're just west of like Washington Square Park, the Newberry Library. The blocks tend to be, they're mostly historical buildings. There are some new townhouses on this block, but mostly historical buildings. It feels like the Gold Coast probably hasn't changed much in a century. And when you walk around on those blocks, it speaks to you of old Chicago. Then at this house, they have, speaking of rooftop decks, when they did the rehab, they lifted the roof. They had a top floor, but it was basically an old attic. The ceiling was only a little over 6 feet high, is what they told me. And so they lifted the roof, and they have about 12-foot ceilings here on this upstairs space, and then expanded what had probably been a very small rooftop deck. I don't know the dimensions, but they did tell me they expanded it. And so now you've got this great indoor-outdoor space. It's surrounded by other historical buildings. You're like in a suspended nest in this old historical neighborhood in Chicago. When they lifted the roof, they put this nice standing seam metal mansard roof on top. I mean, it says, yeah, you're looking at an old house, but you're also looking at a new house, which is something that the seller told me, Rena Polito, one of the sellers, told me she liked the idea that there's this juxtaposition. Again, you're like in this nice outdoor space in a historical neighborhood. You look at the house. Is it old? Is it new? She liked that sort of pairing.
Yeah. And those four windows on the inside, what a pretty little extra piece of natural light that's in there.
Yeah, I think it's a very nice design. You don't walk down the street and see 10 others.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say it's very unique looking. And so this couple, they rehabbed this in 2004. They're Australian. They're moving back to Australia. That's why they're selling this.
Second house in 2 weeks I've covered where people are moving from Chicago to Australia. So I may need to open a bureau in Australia and start looking at where all the Chicagoans are buying. So I'll see ya. I got a flight to Sydney. Yes, they're moving back to Australia. They actually, when they bought it, only she was living here. She had come here for a job. He was commuting back and forth from Australia. And as they told it to me on one visit, when he was here, she said, oh, I bought a house. Maybe you should move here. And he said, well, I got to go back and build some cabinets for the kitchen, because they were doing a gut rehab. He and his brothers had a millwork shop in Australia. So the kitchen is all built in Australia and shipped over, which, again, you're not going to see 10 of those on this block.
Nor do we often hear the phrase commuting from Australia too often.
<It's>
That's
true.
Love.
Yeah, it's true. This is kind of interesting. One thing that I did say in the story is that they had a more sort of dramatic color scheme. They've neutralized it into white in order to sell it. But one of the things you see is that the inner arches of the doorways are traced in wood. There's this carved limestone mantle for the fireplace. They have these great glass chandeliers in many rooms. And you can imagine when you come in, and you're likely to, any buyer is likely to, when you come in and add your own colors, it's going to pop a little bit more than it does in these pictures.
Yeah, but really beautiful, beautiful decorations in this house.
Yeah, I'm not trying to undercut the house. I'm not saying it looks bad. I just mean people who look at this all white might not realize that there, or might imagine that there could be a lot more character in this house than there is at present. This is one of the things they did that I like. These doorways, so they look sort of historical. They're arched, but again, they've got wood inside the arch. And so what you do is you have this sort of historical feeling room. The building dates to the late 19th century, but it feels much more modern. It feels open. It's not a closed-in living room, but it does have the intimacy you might want if we just have, you know, it's two couples having drinks or something like that. You really don't want to be in a warehouse-sized space, which some very modern homes may provide. This is a nice sitting room with a fireplace, and you can see the rest of the house.
Mm-hmm. And you can see that pretty staircase back there. You kind of have this great sight line that just your eye just kind of follows that staircase right up.
Yeah, which is one of the things I like about a house like this, where you're, as you say, your eye is sort of led through the house, where there is sort of a layered feeling. Here's that staircase. It's hard to tell in this photo, but the basement the stairs from this floor down to the basement are trimmed like the stairs from this floor up to the second floor. They did that. There had been a little rental in the basement. They incorporated it into their own living space. There's actually an outside entrance for the rental if you went back to that. but they also made it feel like living space by opening up the sort of boxed in basement stairs and making them feel like the other one, which is something they had dug down the floor in the basement and done other improvements. But it's another way to keep from feeling like, oh, now we're going to the basement.
Yeah. And now let me ask you about that price. They're asking a little over $1.62 million. Does that seem kind of low for that area?
Given the amount of space you're getting, the outdoors, and the fact that things are moving pretty fast, of course, we may see a week or 2 weeks from now that it goes for more than the asking price.
Sure. I feel like we've talked about some really high dollar properties not far from there. That's maybe what's in my head kind of coloring my judgment there.
Yeah, in that case, I think you'd be over in the Dearborn, Astor, those kinds of areas. We're a little farther west now, and I think the prices aren't quite as dramatic when you get over west of Washington Square Park.
You just made a very excellent segue, by the way. Speaking of Astor Street, there is a home that once belonged to the Wrigley family that you wrote about recently. It dropped in value. So tell me about this place.
Yeah, I had just written about it a couple of years ago as well. So in 2018, it sold for $3 million. And then last month, or in April, it sold for 1.55, about half of what it had gone for in 2018. I was surprised. It took a while to reach the people involved because it sold quietly. And finally, what I found out is that the people who bought it for $3 million were planning to do a complete revamp of the interior. Then the pandemic hit. They were living in another house during that time, apparently outside the Chicago area. Pipe broke and the interior was ruined. So rather than start a big round of rehab, they sold it, and they sold it quickly to a real estate investor who told me he's perfectly willing to take this on. As a real estate investor, he's probably done bigger jobs. He bought it planning to rehab it for himself, but he thinks it's such a cool house that what he told me is he may put it back on the market when the rehab is done. It's apparently ruined inside. I haven't seen the inside. They didn't post any photos of the inside. The old listing from several years ago showed it had been updated in the 1990s. So you've got this 1890s exterior. And then a century later, the interior is completely redone with a steel staircase, the steel and glass staircase that goes up three floors. And so like you're looking at the steel from various levels. It's got large panels of wood sort of rising like that. It's got alongside that, it's got a glass piece in the floor of the dining room. Very 1990s, very nice, but maybe a little dated. I watched for permits because at first the buyer wasn't calling me back, and I watched to see if he filed for permits to completely get rid of everything or what. But what he told me finally when I did reach him is that he likes this interior and he's going to rebuild it pretty much as it was. A couple of changes, more modern kitchen. Nobody wants the 1990s kitchen anymore. And the interesting thing about this one, so sold for $3 million in 2018. That was down from $2,000. In 2018, I reported on this house selling for $3 million, which was down a full $1 million from what it sold for in 2000. Also sold in 2006 for a little over $3 million. So 2000 was really, oh, I'm about to make a terrible pun. 2000 was really the high water mark for this house, which now has been filled with floodwaters. Should have planned that one ahead. I apologize. And now it's at 1.55, but we'll see what happens when it's restored. And like, does this really matter? A house was damaged by floodwater, that sort of thing. Well, as you said, William Wrigley lived there for a while right after he founded, when his gum company was really starting to become a huge phenomenon. Another past resident of this house is Carter Harrison. Carter Harrison IV, better known as Carter Harrison Jr., who was a five-time mayor of Chicago, lived here during part of his mayor. He was mayor twice for a total of five terms. He's in office for a while, then he's out, then he's in. And he lived in this house for much of that time. So it has some real history, some historical value. The other thing is, you know, you're not going to tear down a house like this. It's in it's in a landmark district, and it's a beautiful exterior. So that's why it matters to say, oh, what's going to happen to this thing that was filled with, was damaged by water?
Yeah, I mean, that was my first thought, that anytime anytime any house gets any kind of big damage to it, you hate to see it. But also when it has this big history to it, when it's an old house, there's, you know, you want to preserve some of that story that goes with it and preserve some of what you can from it. So,
although, of course, Carter Harrison and Bill Wrigley didn't touch any of that interior because it comes decades after they did, the exterior still sort of speaks to the Gilded era of the Gold Coast.
It'll be interesting to see what ends up happening with this house. If the developer or the real estate investor keeps it for himself with the original plan, or if he says, hey, this is such a good rehab, I'm going to sell it to someone else.
Yeah, I'm dying to see. And he did say he'll let me know. So we may be back talking about this one as well.
Excellent. I love a good follow-up story. I will look forward to talking with you this time next week. Thanks so much, Dennis. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Amy.
Coming up, new marijuana licenses could be issued by the end of the summer. We'll talk about that and more right after this. Here's a great way to stay in touch with Crane's Daily Gist. Subscribe to the Crane's Morning 10. It's our daily newsletter featuring the 10 biggest stories of the day. To subscribe, visit chicagobusiness.com/morning10.
You're listening to Crane's Daily Gist with Amy Guth.
The U.S. State Department loosened travel warnings for several countries around the world in a move that could ease airline restrictions for people wanting to travel internationally as the pandemic eases in parts of the world. The department changed its travel warnings on Tuesday for many countries from a level 4 or a do not travel level to a level 3, which is labeled as reconsider travel. That according to the agency's website. And dozens of countries are impacted by the latest change, including France, Canada, Mexico, South Korea, and Singapore. The advisories aren't binding, but they can help airlines and other countries set their own restrictions for travel, as many other countries often reciprocate for American citizens based on the department's advisories. In its just-wrapped spring session, the Illinois General Assembly created a high-speed rail commission and charged it with creating a statewide plan for a high-speed rail line and feeder network connecting St. Louis and Chicago with Rockford, Moline, Peoria, and Decatur, and using supplemental bus service if needed. The measure was approved at the request of the Chicago-based High-Speed Rail Alliance. The panel will conduct ridership and other studies and report annually to the Governor and General Assembly about what should be done. And Amtrak has similar thoughts in its recently unveiled vision plan with the services it would like to create if Congress approves major new funding and states like Illinois agree to pick up some of the costs after an initial startup period. However, Alliance Executive Director Rick Harnish told Crane's political columnist Greg Hines that he has far more ambitious things in store, envisioning not only new service to Dubuque and Peoria that's not on Amtrak's list, but eventually a 225-mile-per-hour line from Chicago to St. Louis. He said, quote, Amtrak has some really good ideas, but I would urge the Illinois Department of Transportation to think bigger. Harnish also told Cranes that building the St. Louis line would cost an estimated $15 to $20 billion, but the expense, which would be spread out over 40 years, is more than worth it, he says, saying the project is something needed to remain competitive with the rest of the world, which has emphasized rail transportation much more than the U.S. has in recent decades. As of right now, Amtrak trains in Illinois are limited to 110 miles per hour maximum, and in most areas, even slower than that. Opening 220 mile per hour service would require constructing new tracks and support structures, as well as acquiring land. The 50-story former Leo Burnett building on Wacker Drive has hit the market, one of the largest Chicago office properties to go up for sale since the start of the pandemic. The 1.1 million square foot building at 35 West Wacker could fetch close to $440 million, sources familiar with the offering confirmed to Crane's. Reporter Danny Ecker has the story.
We continue to see downtown office landlords test the market. I mean, there's a lot of money out there from major investors that have waited through the pandemic for things to settle down and are now ready to buy. And it's going to take buildings like this one going through a sales process to gauge the new baseline for what downtown office properties trade for. People I speak with that evaluate a lot of office deals around the country say Chicago right now has some relative bargains given the cash flow that some of these properties generate. But of course, the big question is what the next few years will look like. If you buy an office building today, are you signing up for a few years of one tenant after another shrinking their footprint or leaving entirely, and then you have to put a bunch of money into leasing up space again? in what will likely be a very competitive environment. You know, so the assumption is that the pricing on these buildings needs to reflect the fact that there's a lot more risk today than there was 2 years ago.
The state of Illinois could start issuing long-awaited licenses for new marijuana shops by the end of summer. That according to Senator Don DeWitt. The General Assembly passed a law on May 28th that would create two additional lotteries, which would be used to award 185 new licenses to operate cannabis dispensaries. As of right now, there are 110 marijuana shops operated by companies that have licenses granted under the initial medical marijuana law. DeWitt said during a Zoom call hosted by the Cannabis Business Association of Illinois, quote, I'm being told the administration would like to see all the licenses issued by end of summer. And as you may recall, the first licenses were supposed to be issued in May of 2020, but the process got delayed and ultimately ran into complaints and even litigation over how applications were scored and whether it was falling short of social equity goals aimed at diversifying the ownership of the industry. The legislature tried several times to amend the law, but it didn't pass until the spring session. Governor J.B. Pritzker has indicated that he will sign the bill, but it's not yet been sent to him, according to Representative LaShawn Ford, one of the bill's primary sponsors. And that's Crane's Daily Gist for now. Our continuous news feed lives at chicagobusiness.com. Thanks so much to today's guest, Crane's residential real estate reporter, Dennis Rodkin. Be sure to subscribe to these conversations on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your audio on demand. And find hashtag Crane's Daily Gist on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And let's continue talking there about these and other business stories. Our show is produced by Todd Manley at Earsight Studios. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll meet you right back here next time.